Check 1, 2.
Do I look as uncomfortable as I feel?
These chairs bad for you?
No, I'm not used to it. I'm good?
Okay.
All right, let's roll.
We're good to go? We're good?
What are you laughing at?
Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks. And this is Coach's Week. Elliot on the podcast. Later on this week, you will hear from Pittsburgh Penguins head coach Mike Sullivan. But today, Travis Green, one of the coaches, that a lot of people that had him as a player look at and say, I'm surprised he became a coach.
We should just start right there. You've led us right to the first question.
I'm really good. Elliot, please be joined now by Travis Green, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And we're sort of going to break with tradition here a little bit. We're going to start with, and this won't do much for people that are listening to the podcast, but for those watching on YouTube, this is particularly salient. Elliot, we're going to start.
Well, those people will get the audio still, right?
They'll get the audio as well. Okay. Yeah.
So it's not like we're completely screwing over the podcast audio listeners.
No, but giving primacy to eyeballs over ears.
Okay.
This is a video, Travis. We're going to play this for you. Without biasing the jury at all, this was with our interview with Rick Bowness from a couple of weeks ago.
Was there anyone you ever coached who then went into coaching and you said, I cannot believe that this guy is behind a bench? I never, ever would have thought it.
Well, you know, I've coached so many players over the years. I'd have to give that one some thought. I'm sorry. Yeah, but no. No one jumps out of my mind. No. There's a lot of guys that I didn't coach that I'm shocked got into coaching. Or I know one guy who, yeah, let's talk about him, Travis Green in Vancouver. Mm. And every time I see him, he always tells me, Bones, I must have drove you crazy as a player. And so it is Travis Green. But Travis, again, he was a smart hockey player, really good with the puck, good offensive instincts. Didn't have the greatest practice habits, right? But then, so I know the work ethic you need to be a coach in this league, but and give Travis a lot of credit. He went to junior as an assistant coach. He learned the hard way. Another guy that paid his dues. So I'm very, very happy for Travis. But again, every time I see him, he said, Bones, I must have drove you crazy. I said, a little bit at times.
Thoughts?
Not surprising. Yeah, it's not the first time I've heard that. It's funny, I think part of what he's saying probably has helped me to be a better coach. I've said it openly and honestly. You know, there's certain things in my playing days that I was probably embarrassed about. Back to my AHL days, my first couple of years in the NHL. And I think that's part of just life in general when you look back and you learn sometimes the hard way. But you come out probably better for it.
Tell us a story that won't get Jeff and I fired. That you look back at early in your career and you say, I cannot believe that I did this now.
Man, well, there's a lot of them. But, right, my first year in the American Hockey League, I was talking about Butch Goring the other day. And I had Butch in junior in Spokane. And my rookie season in the AHL, I think it was 12, 15, I can't remember exactly how many games in. And I must have been up in the scoring, like second in the league and leading our team. I'm not sure exactly, but I was doing quite well. And someone got hurt in New York and I was packing my bags. I'm going up for sure. That's the way it works. And I didn't get called up and had a little bit of a lip on, probably affected my play. And I remember Butch calling me in because he knew me so well and just saying to trust him and trust the process and to trust that I wasn't ready to go to the NHL yet. And man, he was right. I look back and if I would have gone up then, I might not have even had a career in the NHL. As a matter of fact, I was sitting out games in the AHL by the end of that season. And that was just part of the attitude that I think, adjustment that I needed that, you know, overall probably took 6 to 7 years. It was a long adjustment period, but I think I was a much different player in my last 6 or 7 years in the league than my first 7 or whatever it was.
How then would Travis Green, the coach now, handle Travis Green, the player then?
Different ways. I think that's a big part of coaching nowadays. How you handle younger players, how you handle older players. And it's not the same. I openly say that to players. I'm not going to treat you all all the same. Some of them are at a different place in their maturity level. Some are at a different place in their skill level. And you have to really think about how you treat each player.
Boy, that's really interesting, because one of the things I always used to hear about coaches was the players like guys who treat everybody the same, that the rules were consistent. Right. But we always knew for the Patrick Waughs, there were different rules. Right. Like, first of all, do you care if your players say, oh, he's got favorites or he treats those guys better than me?
I don't necessarily would call it favorites. I think what I'm talking about is how you deal with people one-on-one. There are certain things within our group that, and I think most teams, that it's non-negotiable. There's certain things that you have to treat everyone the same way. A lot of that is your work ethic. That for me isn't negotiable. But how you treat players as far as discipline, maturity level, how many times do they make the mistake? If they make a mistake and they keep doing the same mistake, you probably have to treat them different. It's a lot like your kids. Certain kids, if you have two or three kids, some of them you might treat a little bit different because they probably need it.
Mm-hmm. I can recall Bob Gainey once talking about difficult players, and his point was, and I'm paraphrasing Bob Gainey here, he said something along the lines of, if you don't have difficult players, you're not going to have a very good team. Yeah. Because great players, good players are difficult. Do you agree?
A little bit, yeah. I've played on bad teams, terrible teams, pretty good teams. You know, I think that get the teams that are really good have a little bit of swagger in them that probably can rub some people the wrong way, probably can rub some of their coaches the wrong way. I think you have to be careful as a coach with those players, because in the heat of the moment, they're very competitive guys and they might say some things to you that might piss you off a little bit, and you might have a banter back and forth, which I occasionally have with some of our guys. I look back on our playing days, my playing days, a team we had in Toronto the year we went to the semifinals, we had a lot of guys that could rub people the wrong way, yet it was a pretty good team. And if you have a team with too many angels on it, maybe you play that way. But at the end of the day, it's a hard game. It's a tough game. And you watch playoff hockey, the heat goes up and you need some guys with a little swagger. And I think every good team has that.
Who's that guy on your team? Like, who's the guy on the bench that you and him, you give it back to each other, and when it's over, you kind of wink at each other and say, we both understood what was going on here.
I'm not going to name any names on our team.
Oh, but, come on.
You guys could probably guess a few of them, but, you know, and they're usually guys that are easy
Bo
to
Horvat.
Pick out.
One of them's got to be Horvat.
No, actually, Bo, yeah, once in a while.
Pettersson strikes me as another one.
We're just going to go right down the roster.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Me and Quinn go at it quite a bit. We go back and
really,
forth.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say, my last pick. No, I'm kidding.
No, I think every team has it. And I've noticed with our group, the better we've gotten, the more intense some of our conversations are occasionally. And I try not to get at it too hard, but you still have to keep your players accountable. And how you do that comes across different ways at different times.
Because I have to say, Travis, like, I love watching you on the bench. Because you look like one of the most miserable coaches on the league on the bench. Like, I don't know if there's a guy who smiles on the bench less than you do.
Well, I'm intense when we're playing. It's competitive. You want to win. You want your team to be competitive and intense. You know, I might look that way, but I love doing what I'm doing. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's just the nature of the beast when you're in game mode, and that's part of it.
We started the interview off by playing the Rick Bowness clip. I'm curious further to that. Is there anyone on your team that you could look at and say, I could see this guy being a coach one day? Not trying to wrap anyone's career up, but knowing what you know now about what it takes and what kind of personality you need to have, is there anyone on that team that you look at and you say, you know what? When it's done for this guy, I could see him behind a bench.
Yeah, occasionally I come across a guy like that. I had a player, I won't say who. It was in the American Hockey League. And man, this guy loved the game. Like, I could tell he really loved it. I've only told this once to a player. I felt like this guy was going to play as long as he could. And I just knew he was going to be successful at something, whatever he did, whether it was coaching or business. And I really liked him. I didn't get to know him that long, but I actually told him at the end, like, hey, I think you should retire. And he looked at me and started laughing in the same way. And I said, I'm saying that as a compliment. Like, I think you're going to bang your head against the wall. You're going to do whatever you can to try to make it. And you're probably not going to. And I think you're going to be highly successful in whatever you do. And think about that, because, you know, I'd like to see you be successful in what you do. And I knew he wasn't going to quit mm-hmm. hockey right then. And he went on to play another year the next year in the American League. And then he called me or texted me about a year later. And he just thanked me for that piece of advice. And he had moved on and was having success in what he was doing in business. And, you know, it was nice. It was a nice feeling.
You know, this is not going to be as good an interview if you're not going to tell us who you're talking about.
You know me better than yeah. that.
Well, you know, and that one thing I actually wanted to talk to you about was, so your first NHL job as a head coach is in Vancouver. And I think Vancouver is the second toughest market in the league after Montreal. I actually think it's tougher than Toronto. And Pat Quinn, when he was coaching the Leafs, he would say to us, you guys are jerks, but Vancouver is worse. And you and I, we have a good relationship, but there have been times you said to me, like, Elliot, what the hell? Like, what are you going on our radio or TV and are you saying? And I just wanted to ask you, like, I think in a Canadian market, there's the controversies that come whether you want them or not. But the key for a coach to manage is we can't create them. What's it like working there and how careful are you about what you say?
I definitely think about what I'm going to say. You know, the one thing I when I got into coaching, I kind of promised myself, A, I wouldn't forget what it's like to be the player, and B, trying to keep your, you know, you have to keep your composure as a coach a lot of times too, and not just say things emotionally. You know, I try to be very honest in the media, maybe to a fault, but I don't try to throw players under the bus, especially in Vancouver. I think there's such a passion in the city. The team loves their players. They want the team to win. You have to be very careful because the players also hear, you know, they might hear some of it. They might hear part of it. It could come across in a way that isn't the way you want it to be. And I think I have a good relationship with a lot of our players. And that's not as friends, but as a coach and trying to make them better and having accountability and pushing players to be their best. I just don't know if doing that in the media is necessary. And once in a while, that just happens naturally. But, you know, I think for me, trying to be honest about things in the media as much as you can and keeping your emotions in check.
How many times a year do you look at something on Twitter or watch it on TV or read something in the paper and say, come on, like, seriously.
You mean with my fake account?
Yeah, with your Finsta or your egg Twitter account.
Well, I get,
like, how many times do you look and say, like, seriously, like, come on, that's ridiculous?
Well, our media team does a good job keeping me informed, and I just think that there is a lot of things that, you know, that's what Twitter is. People can say what they feel, what they think. They're not always right, and, you know, sometimes people are right in their opinions. And I tell players this. Coaches are not always right. Sometimes you're wrong, and hopefully you're not wrong as much as you are right, or you're not going to be coaching very long.
We've talked to a lot of coaches about the relationships that they have with goaltenders and how a goaltender can help win you a Jack Adams or a goaltender can help get you fired. And in a lot of cases, the head coach really can't do anything about it. What's your relationship like with your goaltenders? How hands-on or hands-off are you?
I'm not very hands-on when it comes to the technical side of goaltending. I've said it openly. I really like the goalies that stop the puck, and I don't like the ones that don't very much. But as far as personalities, I've had both these guys in the American League, so I know them well. I went to a Calder Cup final with Markey. We have a history. And I've had Demmer as well as a rookie in the American League. So I have a good relationship with them. But when it comes to the technical side, I let our goalie coach Ian Clark handle all of that because I think you have to have people on your staff and let them do their job. And if they're good at it, they'll do a good job of it.
How much would you want them involved in video work with the rest of the team? Penalty kill, for example. How much would you want goalies in the room?
Yeah, they're not in the power play meetings. They're definitely in the penalty kill meetings for sure. Our 5-on-5 play, they'll be in it. Occasionally, they might be on the ice. If one of them needs to get out early before a meeting, we'll do that. But I want them to be part of the meetings. And our meetings aren't just all always about structure or technical stuff. Sometimes there's stuff on the video that is a message about Will or about compete. And I think it's important that the goalies are also seeing the same message and understanding what the players in front of them are trying to do or what the message is that we're trying to send.
I was asking some other coaches about you, and they said that one guy said something pretty interesting. He said that the thing that I wish that I had in my organization that Travis has, he says it clears to him that your GM and you have a good relationship. Like, you pitch on players and he listens to you. It's clear that the lineup you have is a lineup that you would like. What's your relationship like with Jim?
First of all, it's great. We talk a lot. We talk hockey a lot. I could sit and talk all day about the game, about players, about winning, about losing. I think that's most people in the business. That's the way they are. You know, when you do something you love, it doesn't feel like it's work. And Jim's the same way. I think we have a clear vision of what we see as a winning team, the type of players that we like. And there's times where, you know, we don't always agree on it, but that's okay. You're never going to both agree on everything. I feel thankful that that's the kind of relationship we have, where with a coach and a GM that can be open and honest. And I think it's probably important that you both have the same ideas of the game and how you win in the league. Otherwise, you're probably going to A, not believe in the style you're playing, and B, not believe in the type of players you want. So I think Jim's done a great job in adding pieces to our group. When I got into Vancouver 3 years ago, we talked about turning the corner every year, taking a step. And then along the way, you've got to either draft well, you got to make players on your team better, or you got to sign free agents. And the coach and the GM have a piece in both of that, or all three of those. And, you know, I think it's been really good working with Jim.
Okay, here's my first real fishing expedition of this interview. Markstrom, I forgot you guys had a history together. Would you ever say to Jim, I would really prefer it if you sign this guy?
I would not necessarily, player A, we'll call him. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say that. If there was a player that I liked, you know, much like a lot of the free agents or guys on our team, we talk about them all. Players that we want to have back, players that we don't. I definitely don't make the final call, but Jim definitely listens, and I know he appreciates my opinion. But, you know, I will say that probably 9 times out of 10, maybe more, we probably have the same opinion on the player, whether to bring him back or whether to try to sign him.
So you're saying like 4 times 6. Do you think that gets it done?
I'm sure you'll tweet about it.
Want to put any more worms on the hook?
Or no. I figure that's as far as I'm getting on this one.
So I want to talk about Elias Pettersson a little bit here. And we always talk about the players that you would pay to watch. It's a list that includes McDavid and Crosby and Ovechkin, all the usual headliners. I put Elias Pettersson on that list as well. Like, when I watch Vancouver Canucks games, every game he does something where I kind of go, huh, I never expected that. How hands-on are you with him? And when you have a player that's that dynamic and creative, how much do you say maybe the best thing to do as a coach is just let this guy play?
Yeah, there is. Well, I'd like to think we're hands-on with a lot of our players. And it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where you have to be really careful in each player, assessing what their talent level is, what kind of player they're going to be, what they can handle from a maturity standpoint as far as the understanding of certain parts of the rink. And, you know, Petey's a guy that we put a lot of thought into right from the first time we saw him. I remember the first training camp, we more or less said we're going to, you know, we felt like we needed a centerman. And I felt this that he had a real chance to be a centerman and not a winger. He hadn't played a lot of center.
Drafted, he played wing.
Yeah. Well, he played wing in the Elite League in Sweden. So we brought him over, and that was the first step of how we were going to, you know, an example of how we treated him. Because he wasn't, it took him a little bit through the Penticton rookie camp, through training camp, through exhibition. But we really wanted to give it a go where we didn't just say, okay, no, let's put him on the wing. Because he wasn't great right away. But you could see it every day, him getting better, right up to the first game of the regular season. You know, it was obvious for us that he was going to play center. And yet he still made mistakes. You know, he makes some mistakes at his own zone, his D-zone coverage. Part of it just because he hasn't played over here in North America, and he played a different system. Part of it was his strength. And, you know, we were patient with him with those mistakes. I think there are certain players that you have to really let them play through their mistakes. But there's also certain players that you have to be a little harder on. And making that decision always ends up going into analyzing the player and what he's capable of and how good is he and how smart is he.
You see, that's one thing I get the sense is you really believe in the Horvat, Patterson, Hughes, Canucks, that the best days are yet to come. These guys are barely scratching their surface is what they're going to be. And I get the sense that Travis Green believes that this Canuck team is only starting a ride.
I do. I wholeheartedly believe that. When you look at, you know, where we've gone from the first year to the second year to this year, we've taken steps. We've said from the beginning we want to be a team that has a chance to win every year, not a team that just sneaks into the playoffs one year and then isn't there for a while. I believe you need to have multiple chances to win a Stanley Cup to actually win it. You see it a lot. You see Washington trying to win it, and then they finally do. And then when you look at, you know, our players and the age of them, they're still really young. You know, when you look at Patterson, you look at Hughes, like, you know, they're young players. And what they're going to be in 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 years is really exciting. And I think if we keep progressing, you know, we've got a chance to be a good hockey team for a while.
Hughes is fascinating, I think, to all of us. And of course, everyone's going to have a different thing that they enjoy about him. When he steps over the blue line, I'm amazed at his age, how quickly he can create ice around him. Like with a couple of whatever he does, all of a sudden, wow, ice appears around Quinn Hughes. What impresses you the most?
Believe it or not, what impresses me the most about Quinn is just his demeanor. Never mind his hockey skills. I love how he is off the ice. When he has a bad game or when he has a good game, you know, it doesn't affect him too much. And I think that's really important for star players, partially because they're going to make some mistakes. Star players, young star players do, and they have to be able to keep their confidence. They're the ones that are going to be on the ice when the heat's on, when you're playing in a game seven or you're playing in a playoff game and you got to find a way to win. And usually those star players are the ones that make the special play or a lot of times make a special play to decide a game, and you need game breakers like that. I think he has that, and he has the demeanor to be that. Now, his skill level is another thing. You know, he's just such a good skater. His hockey sense is great. He does things a lot of times that, well, quite frankly, other guys can't do. Never mind on our team, but in the league, we have video clips where, you know, when we're trying to figure out our game review, and we just don't show it to the team. There's certain things that, you know, other guys can't do that he does.
Like, what are we talking about here?
It might be one of these, like a spin or creating space for himself. And right. And I wouldn't ask another defenseman to do that.
I'm curious, what's the next challenge for him? He's already jumped over so many hurdles with you guys. What's the next challenge for Quinn Hughes?
You know, that's a good question. It's an exciting question, though. Mm-hmm. You see what he's done as a rookie. And, you know, you start to think, okay, what is this guy going to be like next season? What's he going to be like in 3 or 4 years when he has more of a man's body and the strength? You know, whatever it is, wherever he gets to, I know that he's going to maximize what he should be just because of the way he is.
One more about drafts, because those last two players we just talked about, these aren't first overall picks. Right. And I know at least one and probably the other one, Vancouver had ranked a lot higher than other teams did, and they made the right decision. How much would your general manager talk to you before the draft and say, man, if we can get this Pettersson kid, I know we're at 5 here, if we can get him here, or I know we're at, you know, for the Chicago draft, man, if Quinn Hughes is still available, how much would Jim keep you abreast of what's happening with the Green Bay?
When it comes to the draft, I don't really, you know, I don't have any say in who we're picking. I think Jim and I like certain type of players. We want to get high-end skill guys as well. But we do definitely talk about the players. I get excited when I go to the draft. I hear the scouts talking about each player individually. And, you know, once we see our list and I'm sold that list is the list, and because we have the best scouts in the world, so I'm plugging them. But as the draft goes on, I'm getting excited. Like, I'm like, okay, this guy's going to be, because I know where the player is on our list. So I haven't watched the player, but as Quinn Hughes was unfolding and we were getting hoping that we got him, I was sitting at the table getting pretty excited about it.
Have you ever, when a kid gets introduced to you, have you ever said you better be bleeping ready for camp, to, like just as a joke to break the ice or anything?
I haven't done that yet. They're probably nervous enough than to get a shot by me, or they don't even know who I am by the, yet. So they're like,
I'm sure they know who you
who's
are.
Who's the stick boy here? Give me.
All right, here's question number two.
All right.
From Rick Tockett.
Yeah.
Okay. You're at a table.
Yep.
You've got $1 million in poker chips. Travis Green has $1 million in poker chips. Who wins?
What about Kessel?
Is Kessel that good?
He's a good poker player.
Okay, so let's add Kessel. Three of you with $1 million, and you can put anyone else in there you want at the table. Who's the best poker player in hockey?
Best poker player in hockey, yeah. That's a good one. Greeny's pretty good poker player. Well, we used to play some poker back in the day in Phoenix, and Tkachuk and Roenick were, I mean, they used to pay for all my meals. Those guys are fishes. But Greeny's very analytical. Like, Kessel's aggressive, but he's a smart guy. He's friends with that Danny Negreanu, so he gets his tips from those guys. But that would be a good one. Maybe Greeny might win it a little bit. Greeny's a little bit more patient than us, probably.
So $1 million in chips. You, Tockett, Kessel, anyone else you want in there. Tockett picks you. Who wins?
Between us three?
Or anyone else you want to throw in there too.
Yeah. Wow. Who else is in your league?
Like, who else are we missing?
You know who else is a decent poker player is Paul Kariya.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he loves it.
So put the four of you at a table with $1 million in chips.
Well, Paul's going to say him, but he's wrong. He's probably the worst player, but he likes it. I've never played poker or seen Phil Kessel play. I've played a lot of cards with Tock over the years and haven't played a lot of poker. I've sat at a table with Jeremy Roenick in Vegas a few times playing just when we've been in the city at the same time, and he would probably be second to last. But, yeah, I don't know. Tock plays a lot of poker too, so I'd probably bet on myself. That's just the way I am, but at the end of the day, you don't know for sure. It's still a game of luck.
So you're saying you'd win, but you're too polite to say it.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I'd
win. If I was going to bet on someone, it'd be me.
You know, Travis, we've talked to a lot of coaches this year on the podcast, and we like to ask them about the Coaches Association. And to a person, they all talk about how much it means to them and how important it is for that position and those people. Your thoughts on the Coaches Association?
It is. It's something new to me. When I got into the NHL, I didn't know a lot about it. And now that I've seen it live and how it's grown over the years and what they're trying to do for coaches, not just financially, but from a mental side and trying to help past coaches, I really appreciate it and I value it. And I think it's, it goes back to a lot of things in life, really, not just hockey or coaching, but if you can have people there to help you through things, through problems, you know, it's great.
You mentioned previous coaches. When you look at where your career is at right now, are there a couple of coaches that you look back and you say, I don't know if I'd be where I am now if it weren't for blank?
Oh, man. Well, there's lots of people, for starters. Lots of coaches. I did a presentation at the coaches conference this year about coaching in general, and I talked about, past coaches that I really liked. Certain examples. I also said there was a lot of coaches I didn't like that have helped me along the way. Some of them were in the room, I said that day.
Okay. Now this one you got to tell us. Like, who were you looking at when you said
What do their names rhyme with, Travis? Right. How about that?
So, but there are certain guys. I learned a lot from Al Arbor.
Kelly loves
just
Al Arbor.
Just looking back, I learned a lot as a young guy, but I also looking back on my after I was done playing, I learned a lot. Certain things that he did that just really impressed me and helped me as a player, really. Butch Goring was another one that I owe a lot to. You know, I could list off a lot of guys that have helped me along the way. I remember Paul Maurice. I didn't have him for very long. Mm. I remember him telling me that it was near the end of my career and it was the year-end meeting. And, he told me, he said, you should be a coach. And that meant a lot to me.
Did you believe him?
At that point, yeah. Yeah, I knew I wanted to be then. I probably, when I hit 30, you start thinking about it. I think that's the magic number with hockey players.
At what point would you have stopped laughing at that statement?
Probably around 30. I knew by then you start thinking, okay, how much longer am I going to play? Am I going to get to play? For me, I would have played probably till, which they told me I couldn't. I would have kept playing in the NHL if they'd allowed me. But around 30, I started thinking about what I'm going to do after hockey. I loved the game so much that I knew I wanted to stay in the game. And, you know, I figured coaching would be probably the road that I go down.
Good?
I'm good. That was a lot of fun.
I just wanted to know if you pick yourself as the best card player, and you pretty much did, so I like that.
Yeah, I don't play as much as I used to, and but in the summertime we get together with some friends, and you know, it's a thinking game.
I love it.
Yeah, it is a real thinking game, mm-hmm. and reading people, and, mm-hmm. and you can almost use it as an example of coaching in a way, where you're constantly watching what people do and trying to figure out little tendencies in their game, and especially if you play at a table with, you know, the same people, a bunch of friends for a while.
Travis, that was a lot of fun.
All right, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.